This conversation with Beulah Dollar Herman took place at her home in Troy on November 9th, 1976. The interviewer was Sam Schrager.
I guess it was 28, and you know, we've lived at Moscow and here all this time.
When you came, where were you coming from?
We came from Colorado out here.
Mm-hmm. And what was it that made you decide?
Well, my husband wanted to get out on a farm someplace. We were living on a farm in Colorado, but they had so many windstorms there, and it was hard on the crops, and he wanted to get out here. And he knew some people that lived at Moscow, the Bumgarners, years and years ago. I didn't know them. And he come out here and looked around, and he liked the country, so the following year we moved out, and we've been here ever since. So, and then as I said, I can't remember just when I started to work for Psychiana. Let's see, it was must have been about 1943 and 1944 mm-hmm. that I worked there.
Had you worked before you worked there? Had you worked around in Moscow?
No, I hadn't. Mm-mm. No, I just worked there. Because with the type of work, about the only type of work they had around Moscow for women was working, sorting the peas, and so many people couldn't do that. Because they run on a belt and you couldn't do it. And working with...
Why, they couldn't do it because it was hard?
It made them sick. You know, it was a movement all the time, you see. And that's why so many of them worked for Dr. Robinson, because it was the type of work they could do. And it wasn't hard. It was a little bit confining and sometimes monotonous. But then it was a job. Mm-hmm. And as I said, he was very nice to work for. Of course, he very seldom ever come around to pay too much attention about the work, but then, of course, we always saw him. His office was in the building where I worked. And as I said, I saw Dr. Bach when he was there. He was there two or three times while he was in Moscow, and Dr. Robinson brought him out and introduced him to all of us. And then after this book came out, he gave each of us a book. But now, I think that you got...
Are you saying that they had, most of the people that worked there had a very positive impression of him, like thought he was a very good person?
Well, all of us that worked there definitely thought, and as I said, he was very nice. It was more the town people that were more or less down on him, but he never hurt anyone. He never did, and he done a lot of good for the town. He is the one that put the post office on a first-class rate. He did that because of, with all of his mailing. You see, I worked in the mailing department, and, well, all of our building was advertisement, but we sent out the mail for these lessons, and then when the lessons, anyone that wanted to fill in the cards and send them back, they went to the other building, and then they mailed the lessons out. But... any time there was a fundraising deal in Moscow, and they were short, Dr. Robinson filled it out. But it was never published because he didn't care for that publicity.
Mm-hmm.
But, as I said, most of us knew it, but the people in town never gave him credit for anything, never. There were a lot of people in town that, following in this one drugstore there, he mentions him in one of his books, In the Corner Drug. He helped him when he first began getting started there. And there was a few of them that put money in that had a little interest in it, and they got their money back and everything. But as time went on, he didn't need any help. This was when he first started. But as I said, Dr. Robinson never hurt anybody. And you could get a lot of good out of his lessons if you wanted to follow through with them. Of course, now none of us working there ever had them, because that was one regulation that, and very seldom did any of us ever read the advertisements. Of course, they changed from time to time, but in the hours that we worked, we weren't allowed to be reading it. We were supposed to be working. And if some of us wanted to take some of it home, we did. I used to take some of it home, but it's been so long ago, I don't even remember what it was.
But you couldn't take the lessons home and look at them?
Well, now the lessons were put out from the other building. Whether any of them ever taken any of them home, I wouldn't know. But in our mail, it was a regulation, because we mailed thousands and thousands of letters a day. And then we'd see, we had to sort them just like they do in the post office. And if there was any from Moscow, we threw them out. Moscow and Pullman, towns round close, we threw them out. That was a regulation. Because, you see, he knew that the people of Moscow didn't go along with him on his beliefs, so he didn't bother them.
Well, I guess one thing that I've heard was that he was afraid that he would be accused of trying to take people away from the other denominations.
Yes, yes, that was part of it. Mm-hmm. As I said, he never interfered with any of the churches up there or anything else. But as I said, he just didn't bother him at all. But they were a well thought of family.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew all the family very well. But
he discouraged you, the people that worked for
mm-hmm.
him, from looking at his lessons or looking at
yes,
from being a part of the religion
mm-hmm.
too.
Yes,
he didn't really
right.
want the people.
Of course, he never did tell us that, but then the supervisors, you know, over it, they always, when they hired anyone, as a rule, lots of the girls would come in there, I knew when they hired them, but sometimes they didn't tell them that, but every once in a while you'd see them reading it, and any of us that had worked there for a while, we'd just go and tell them that to go ahead with their business in hand, what they're supposed to do, that they weren't supposed to, if they wanted to read them, they'd take them home with them, not while it's
mm-hmm.
working.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if one of the supervisors seen it, why, she always come over and bawled them out. And the rest of us would do this on the sly to keep them from getting a bawling out. So,
how were the supervisors to work for? Were they what were the working conditions like? How much was expected of you as far as output and all that?
they expected us to do an awful lot. That is, if we put out 35,000 a day, they thought we should put out 40 or 50 a day. And of course, that always depended on how many of us was working on the mailers, because you could only do so much of that. But then, now one of the supervisors is still living. She lives there in Moscow on Hayes Street, Jenny Nesbitt. Yeah, if you wanted to, of course, her husband isn't very well, and so I don't know if you stopped there sometime, why. But then she is still living, and she's the one that I worked under all the time I worked there. Of course, there was some others that worked closer to her, too, you
mm-hmm.
see. If she couldn't be there, there was other supervisors
mm-hmm.
taking over.
She was in charge of
mm-hmm.
how many of the whole operation in the building?
She was in charge of our building.
Mm-hmm.
That is the...
Which was?
See, in the back of our building was where all the machines was, where they done all the printing and the folding. And then they were brought in from there into our part of the building. And we had to, most of the time we had four or five different folding things that we put in an envelope. And then you see they were put in these envelopes that already had the names on them. And then when we got so many hundreds and hundreds of them, why, part of us had to go and work on the mailers and sort them all out. And it had to be done and got to the post office each day so they could be sent out. And we run them through those mailers, as I said, it's lots of times that I know that we mailed as high as 65 and 75,000 a day. Of course, we really had to work fast to do it. But then lots of times we didn't put that many out, because sometimes where we had to change, each group of names went by numbers. And when you got those filled, well, you started in on another group, and they all had to be kept separate, you see, until they were put into the mailer. So so that way when the cards were numbered that were put in there, they come back to the other building and they could tell what percent of a certain group of advertising names, what percent they got back.
Uh-huh. And what was your own job there? What were you doing?
Well, I did a little bit of all in that part, because none of us ever worked in the part of the building where the machinery was.
Mm-hmm.
I stamped cards. As I said, they had these cards that you filled out. But each group of advertising names that you got, like they come from this company in New York, this company in Chicago, or someplace else,
mm-hmm.
they were kept separate. And if there was 40,000 of them names, you stamped 40,000 cards with that number on them. And that was one of my jobs. But you see, you would get tired of doing that. Of course, there was only a few of us that could stamp those cards because you had to do it fast. Well, and then, as I said, we had these stacks of folded material in front of us. Sometimes it was three or four and then a card. And you put them together like this and put them in an envelope. And then we put
mm-hmm.
them in these boxes. And when you got these boxes full, they were about this size, well, they went to the mailer. And then they had to be run through the mailer.
And the information in those envelopes would be just a general, mostly in advertisements
mm-hmm.
for Psychiana.
And the card then, if you wanted the lessons, you filled the card out and mailed them back. And then they went up to the
right.
other building.
Right.
Yeah, and they sent the lessons out the other building.
These lists that he got, were they how did he get them? Were they from organizations, or where were they?
Yes,
from?
A lot of people yet today wonder how they get an advertisement in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's very easy for me to know, because that was one of my jobs. I opened up those boxes by the hundreds and hundreds. One advertisement company will sell them to maybe 5,000 other companies. Like if there's an ad in a paper for something, regardless of what it is, and you know how many people may send in for it, they've got your name on a mailing list. They sell that list of names. As I said, if there's 5,000 other companies that want
mm-hmm.
them, they sell them.
Well, do you have any idea of where his lists were coming from? Where?
Yes, I knew where they all came from, but of course, as I said, it was just everywhere. Maybe it was somebody that was advertising some foolish, ridiculous thing to sell. It's like I said, Dr.
Uh-huh.
Robinson's, what Dr. Robinson put out didn't hurt anybody, where
right.
some of this stuff that they, where they got the names at,
right.
wasn't.
Well, I wonder, like, if he got, say, a list from seed companies or something
yes.
like that.
Yes,
yeah.
any place.
Anywhere he could, then,
any,
really.
Any advertisement that you see in any magazine, they have the right to sell those names. And they
mm-hmm.
do sell them. They sell them to hundreds and hundreds of advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And yet today, you know, like, you can get something in the mail and that you didn't send for or anything.
Right.
And you wonder where it come from. That's where it come from. It was
mm-hmm.
sold from someplace
mm-hmm.
that has your name.
Well, when we talked a little bit about the kind of people who would be interested in the lessons, did you have an idea yourself on who
yeah.
would be the people who were asking for the Psychiana?
Well, I never met any of them, no. As I said, they were from every place else in the United States and in the world. You see, we mailed a lot of them to different places in Europe, different islands. And, as I said, no, I've never met any of the people.
Do you think that a great part of the people who were getting the material were, say, from the big cities?
Was what?
Were from the big cities? You think many of the people?
An awful lot of them, yes. An awful lot of them. But, of course, not all. But they had to be. We could tell that because, now, like, when we went through the list of New York City names, you know, why, that part of the mailer would be full 5-6 times a day, or Chicago or San Francisco or all like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, there was little towns, too. Because in sorting your mail, unless you had 10 from one town, they had to go separately, you know. So, as I said, But it's been a good many years since I worked there. A lot of it I forgot.
Well, what makes you figure that the lessons, what's your own personal knowledge to feel that the lessons were good for people?
I think so, because it's like I said, they wouldn't hurt anybody if you wanted to follow through with them. And there was a course of lessons, I can't remember anymore how many, they was set, and then they was followed up. And any time, if they wanted to discontinue, if they could, or if they wanted their money back, they got it back. That is, if they hadn't got all the lessons. But then outside of that, that's all I really know about the lessons, because that wasn't in our department.
Do you know what the cost of them?
No, I used to know, yes, but I wouldn't.
I haven't run across it in the literature.
No, I don't think you would in any of that. Now, you might in some of this literature, because Lonnie said that he knew that all of his writings and literature that he had at home after he passed away, you see, then she moved from the house sometime afterwards, and he knew that it was turned over to the university. And some of the books that he thought that hadn't been put out or something like that, he said all of that was turned over there. And he said, at that time when I told him about you, he said, well, I'd like to talk to him. And I said, well, you bring the book up, and I said, we'll give him a ring. But as I said, you know, he kept forgetting to bring it up because he was busy working down there.
Well, what was the pay like that you got for working there? Do you remember?
Not very much, because that was during the Depression that I worked there. And when I started in, I was getting $60-some dollars a month. But that what was pretty good pay at that time, you know. And, of course, we got a few raises. But there was one thing that he never done. If we were out a few days sick, we were never docked or paid.
Really? You mean you got paid for those days?
We got paid for it. Yes, we did. But as I said, that was during hard times. And it isn't like your salaries.
Sure.
No, but that was pretty good pay for us. Of course, now the girls that did the typing, they got more pay.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the supervisors got more pay.
Did you have breaks in your work day?
15 minutes is all.
How often?
Once a day.
That's all?
Once a day. Because that has been changed. Because at that time, people didn't have coffee breaks all day long.
Was that 15 minutes for lunch?
No, well, we had an hour at lunch.
Okay.
But we had 15 minutes. We could either take it in the morning or we could take it in the afternoon. Yeah, and only two of us went out together. But that was it.
You mean the others kept working?
Yeah, the others kept working.
So you went off in pairs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But as I said, it isn't like it is. Has been for the past 20 years.
No.
They get coffee breaks.
That's right.
All the time.
And you were expected to put out a lot while you were
working.
Yes,
we were.
To work very fast.
Yes, we were. We was expected to put out a lot, and we did. What I mean is, it was like some days where there was some changeover with a lot of different numbers, or, of course, we didn't always run with as many. Sometimes they'd be maybe 20 of us working, and then maybe they'd be a kind of a slack period and part of them would be laid off, but there has been as many as 45 or 50 working in the two buildings.
Mm-hmm. Does that include the people working on the printing as well?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's a rule, there was only four in the printing, but then they run those all day long, at the printing machines and the folding machines, you know. Yeah. And a lot of the girls that worked there, they were girls that were putting their husbands through school, through the university. And they had very little to live on, you know, but they were glad to have the work while they were there.
8 hours a day, 5 days a week?
What?
8 hours a day, 5 days a week? Is that
Yes.
What it was?
Yes, that's
right. Were some of the people, were many of the people also local people like yourself?
Yeah, they were the paper, Mark. They were all local people right there. A few of the girls came from Deary and a few of them from Troy. And once in a while you got some from Pullman. But most all of them were local people right there. Yeah, they all were, and they were all glad. You know that one girl that worked there, her small brother was killed out on the highway, and their mother was a widow, and they didn't have very much. And I do know that he paid all the funeral expenses and everything for it. But the people in town never knew that. They didn't know it. As I said, he didn't want them to know those things. And as I said, other than that, I do know that when they were short in funds, when they were raising funds for things, if they were short, why, he made it up. But he never got any credit for it.
What do you think that the people who disliked him in Moscow, why do you think they didn't, there was so much of this,
well,
you know, giving him a hard time?
That would be only in my own opinion. So many of them, Moscow is a town that is a little bit hard to get used to. I've always felt that years and years back that they always felt a little above most other towns or something. Why, I wouldn't know. But I think most of them were just more or less down on him because they didn't believe in what he was doing. But if you pin them right down to it, they didn't even know what he was doing. And as I said, most of it, because I very seldom ever talk to anybody about it, because if I was around somebody and they started saying something about him, I'd always just say, well, now, let's drop it right there. I work for Dr. Robinson, and he's a very fine man to work for, and you don't know anything about what you're talking about. And so that's the way it was. And I know he set up a youth center up there. There was no place for the younger school kids to go to, and he put up this youth center. Every bit of it, he paid for every bit of it, and paid to have it kept open, and paid to have someone stay there. He did that.
Was it free to the kids to use?
Yes, it was free for the kids. He did that. And another thing, there's where Robinson's Lake is at Moscow, that he gave that to the county. And for years, there was never anything much done about it. They didn't try to keep it up. But it now, in the past 10 or so years, they have tried to do something with it. Of course, it's like a lot of other parks and things. They try to fix up something, and then it's destroyed. But now Dr. Robinson did that, too. And I don't know of anybody else around town that did those
things.
Like
that. No, that's right.
I don't. And as I said, that is my opinion, and it was most everyone's opinion. Of course, we ourselves that worked there, we didn't discuss those things, you know. But
it's interesting what you say about Moscow as being a little cold, because I've other people who came to Moscow in the 20s have told me the same thing. It was not an easy town to be accepted in.
No, it isn't. It isn't. And we lived up there 20-some years, 23 years. And so I felt that I, you know, with what I say, really, that's the way Moscow is. Of course, now, in the past 10, 15, 20 years, there's been lots of other people come in. But believe me, a lot of those older people up there are still just like that. They are not a bit friendly. They never were. And as I said, they were against Dr. Robinson. As I said, of course, he didn't let it bother him any. But he knew that that's the way they felt, so that's why the regulations were what they were.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, we always we went by the regulations. We respected them, and we went by them. And there was a lot of us that worked there that we couldn't work anyplace else. Of course, back then, there was very few places in Moscow where you could work. Nowadays, you know, most of the wives can work up at the university and places like that, putting their husbands through school. But
do you feel that there was something spiritual about him as a person?
Yes, I do. Yes, I really do. Because I think there had to have been for him to do what he did. I really do. Of course, now there again, the people of Moscow didn't think so. And I can't truly remember any minister around Moscow that ever had anything to do with Dr. Robinson. And me, myself, I don't think that's speaking very highly of the ministers up there then. Of course, there's none of them there mm-hmm. now that were mm-hmm. there. But I, myself, don't think that was speaking very highly for him. Now, would you?
No. No, I think I think you should have speak to him.
I think so.
Spend time with him.
I think so. But, as I said...
It must have put him, even if it didn't bother him much, it mm-hmm. must have... When people doubt you, it makes things more difficult for you. It just seems natural to me. If people think that you're, they suspect you, they don't trust your motives, well, you have to feel it hurt, and it has to make you feel isolated, at least.
Yes. Well, now, he more or less was. Of course, as I said, he come and went without interfering with anybody, you know. Dr. Robinson always drove some of the most expensive, well, the most expensive cars that were ever in Moscow. And there again, I think a lot of people were jealous of him. And there was a few people up there years and years ago that held up for him, but they never discussed him with anyone or anything, because that was just something that you didn't do, because everybody knew how the town was, and so mm-hmm. you just didn't. But he come and went. Of course, he was a busy man. He was gone an awful lot, always. You can tell that by his books that you've read. Now, Mrs. Robinson, she belonged to some different clubs up there. And as I said, everyone always spoke very highly of her.
I've heard she was a very wonderful woman. That's what they...
Yes.
Now, really people that do not care for him will still say that they really did...
Oh,
like
yes.
her.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the kids.
Yeah, they did. And both the boy and the girl was very nice. The girl, Florence, worked with us one summer. But she did that. It was really a little funny. She, all through grade school, nearly in high school, she went with this boy that she finally married, Raoul Ashby. And one summer, the doctor and Mrs. Robinson and Al was going to spend the summer in California, and Florence didn't want to go, and he said, well, either you go or you go to work. Well, she said, then I'll go to work. So he brought her down to the Psychiana building and introduced her to us. Of course, most of us knew her anyway, and he said, now you put her to work. And he told the supervisor, this Mrs. Nesbitt, said, she doesn't get any favors at all. And so she just loved working there. Of course, she didn't know a thing on earth about it. It was just like anyone that come in. But, you know, she was taught, and she worked with us all. Mm-hmm. And she really loved it. She loved every bit of it. And when they came back then, and of course she had to quit then when school started. So she felt so bad about it because she's going to have to quit. So she talked her folks into having a big party for us up to their home. And all of us women working there could invite our husbands and all of the husbands that worked in the other part and in both buildings, they could have their wives come. And we had this big party up to Dr. Robinson's house. And Florence stood at the door as we were leaving and shook hands with each one of us and told us goodbye and cried while we, as she did this. Now that's how much that she enjoyed working there with us. But she didn't know a thing about it when she went in there.
Boy, she must have really been close to you as...
Yes, yes, she was.
Do you feel that was true of the group of women that worked there generally, that they were fairly close, that it was a close social group?
Yes, they were. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were. And then Florence went on, and as years went by, and she and Raoul got married. And the last I knew of him, he was a captain... Well, he's retired. He was a retired captain from the Army.
Hmm.
And after they were married quite a while, because they had three children, and then Florence had polio. But
she did.
It didn't leave her very badly crippled. And I don't know where she and Raoul is anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they were stationed in different islands and places,
mm-hmm.
and they would come back now and then. But anyway, the doctor just felt that she'd always went with him. She never went with anyone else. He was a professor's son up there at the university. And but he was a good kid, you know what I mean, is that they put him to work down there, helping, doing a little bit of janitor work. And of course, he used to give all of us working there kind of a rough time, because he'd say, well, now you've got to all move. I'm going to do this. I've got to get out of here. And we'd say, now, Raoul, you know, you don't do any of this work until we are out of here. But of course, we'd go along with him. But anyway, the doctor really didn't want her to marry him, but they did. And as I said, he got to be a captain in the Army, and he is retired with a very big salary.
Well, you know, he figured that his, he couldn't find a boy good enough for his daughter.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember so well, quite some time before the doctor passed away, Al was supposed to come down and kind of learn the business a little bit. And I remember the first time he come in, he'd come around to all of us. You know, we sit at these long tables, unless we was working on the mailer. And he'd come around and stand by our chair, and he'd say, well, now, can you tell me just what you're doing? And we would tell him, excuse me.
Sure.
Yes, he said that he was going to kind of look after some of the business a little bit. But he said, frankly, I don't know anything about it. So he said, if all of you can explain to me what you are doing. Well, we did, as he come and talked to all of us. And, of course, he did the same thing in the other building. And then it wasn't, he was down in the office at different times, but then we never knew too much about what he was doing. But then it was shortly after that the doctor passed away. So then it wasn't too long after that the manager and Alf decided to just close up the business, and they did. And that I had quit working there by then when they closed it up. So that part of it. Jenny could tell you all about that, because
mm-hmm.
she was still with them.
About why they decided mm-hmm,
yeah.
to.
Because the thing was, once the doctor was gone, why I think that they felt that it really couldn't go on, because he was the one that always more or less kept the lessons going, and anything new that was put out, and where none of them in the family could do that. So,
mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Robinson had quite a bit of money in the newspaper there. It's Idahonian
mm-hmm.
now. At that
right.
time, it was a News Review. And then they just kept their interest in that, she and Al. Of course, but then Al was married too. And so, as I said.
Well, I had heard that his father wanted him to take over after he died, but that Al really couldn't do it. He didn't feel that he could. And
he didn't know anything about it, as I said. When he come in there, he told each of us, he said, I don't know a thing about it. He didn't know what we were doing. And when we showed him and told him, he still didn't understand it, you see, because his father had never told him anything
mm-hmm.
about it.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, I think after I know he would want him to went on with it, but I'm sure the manager, I can't remember who the manager was, it used to be Anderson, I forget what Elmer Anderson, I think that's mentioned in some of his
mm-hmm,
books.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that I knew that was manager.
He's gone now, isn't he?
Yes, mm-hmm. And I can't remember who, Cass was the one at the last. I can't remember his first name, but Cass. I think there is some of the cast still living in Moscow. But he was, and as I said, Alf didn't know,
mm-hmm.
only what little he'd found out, just, you know, being around there, and worked some with his father before he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they felt that they knew enough about it to keep going. So they just
And the children really were not involved in running the business.
No, they weren't involved at all.
Mr. Robinson was completely sincere about his religion and the philosophy of life that he had through the religion. That Psychiana was a true faith for him.
I think so. I don't think that he could have did what he did without believing in it. And he was a very unusual man. And as I said, he was a man that, most anyone could talk to, and, you know, so many of these come from, like Dr. Bach and some of them, you know, that was so deeply interested in his work. It wasn't that any of them ever had his lessons and things. It was just that they were deeply interested in it. And, as I said, I always felt that he had to be sincere to do what he did. Wouldn't you think so?
Yes, that's what's really struck me in reading the books that I have, is that they all seem to me to speak from his heart, that it's some deeply felt beliefs. And you see what those people who didn't like him have had to say about him is that more or less that he was just trying to con people, and that he wasn't sincere in his that it was just set up as a big promotional deal. I'm sure you've heard that. That's the criticism. And my own response to that is just what you say. How could he have written what he wrote in the way he wrote it if he didn't feel what he was saying? Because it's so when you read it, it's just the feeling is there.
Well, that's what I've always said, and I'm sure with the lessons, They were sincere enough that there was thousands and thousands of people that taken it. And if they hadn't have been that sincere, I don't think they could have ever went on through with them. And it's like I said, I happen to know that they wouldn't hurt anybody. Did your dad come? No. But anyway, I always felt that he was sincere about it, but it's like you said, the people that were down on him, they said he wasn't. Well, and it wasn't up to them to say. They didn't know. And I know a lot of people that was down on him, like some of the business people up there, if they thought what he was doing wasn't fair or was a little bit crooked, they themselves were on that side.
On what side?
Well, they themselves wasn't up and up.
Oh.
Because, as I said, regardless of what their business was, well, a lot of them wasn't doing things that were right.
Yeah.
But they was down on him. And as I said, and another thing, part of them I think were jealous of him because he drove these expensive cars, they had expensive things, but to visit with them and talk with them, they were just as common as they could be.
Really?
Yes, they were. Just as common as they could be.
To Mrs. Robinson and and him too, to speak to him, he was
Yes, he was. And he didn't go around town talking the religion to anybody. If anybody wanted to talk to him, well, that was fine, but he didn't hesitate to tell them what he thought.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why some of the ministers were so down on him, because if some of the church people would tell him that they didn't believe this or believe that, or like what he put out, well, he'd ask them how they could believe some of the stuff that was being taught to them. And, of course, as I said, they were all down on him, but I myself always felt that any of the ministers that was down on him, and they all were, and I didn't think that it was speaking very highly of them. And in my opinion, they just wasn't what I would call good Christian people, any of the ministers. And nearly always the Catholic priests, they come and went, of course, but they never would have anything to do with him, never. And I said, well, perhaps they're afraid he's going to take a little of his congregation away from them or something. But No, I've always felt that Dr. Robison, he was a very unusual man. He was an interesting man. And I've always felt that he was sincere about it all. Of course, that would be my opinion.
Do you feel that the people that worked
yes.
there felt the same way?
Yes. Yes, they did. Mm-hmm. Of course, we had lots of help come and go. As I said, they were students, you know. Their husbands was going to university, and they were glad to have a job while they was there. Mm-hmm. And I met lots of them. They come and went. They was from all over the United States. And, of course, you always got some that you had to let go. They couldn't keep up with the work and things. A lot of them, you know, was just their paycheck was more they was after. But then you find that with anything. Mm-hmm. So,
was your husband farming at the time?
He did at that time. Mm-hmm.
And were there other women there whose husbands were farmers too, working?
Oh, most of them lived there in town. We lived right off the edge of town. And we had a dairy for a while with the farm. Most of them lived right there in town, and a lot of them were widow women, you see, that needed the work and couldn't work other places. Mm-hmm. And as I said, if you were sick a few days, well, you were never docked.
Did you get raises while you were there?
What?
Did you get raises in pay while
yes,
you were
yes, I think I think we had three or four raises, but they, of course, mm-hmm. at that time, too, they didn't amount to too much. But,
right.
you know, it was a help. It isn't like it is nowadays, or even 20 years ago.
Well, you started about when? About in the early 40s, or was it even earlier than that?
I think it was about 40, in 43 and 4 and 5, somewhere along there.
Mm-hmm.
I think I still have some papers on some of my paychecks.
Mm.
When I was there, if I went through them, I could tell. But mm-hmm. as I said, I can't just remember exactly.
What do you remember his bearing as being like, Robinson's? His bearing, you know, the way he seemed. Was he? I heard he was pretty heavy. He was a large man. Is that true? He was large and tall.
Well, he wasn't what you call a heavy man. Of course, he was tall, but he was big bones, you know. But his structure was, he was a very good looking person. And, but as I said, now he'd come and went, the office was in our building, he'd come and go, sometimes we'd see him come in, the door was always locked until he'd come. And he'd open it, and oh my, of all the interference. But,
moved to out here by Troy after living in Moscow, did you find the people to be friendlier?
Oh,
did you find much difference?
My, yes, there's all the difference in the world with the people around here. Did you think so?
Well, I never lived in Moscow myself.
No, that's right. You never lived there. Where did you come from to Troy?
Well, I lived in Portland.
In
before
Portland.
That, yeah.
I see.
But I was going to school there, so I wasn't exactly just living there. You know,
yeah,
it's kind of different.
Yeah, I know.
But I was wondering the contrast that, you know, if there was a real difference to you.
Oh, yes, you bet there is. You bet there is. There's an awful lot of difference. Of course, in a smaller town, of course, everybody knows one another here, you know, and everybody. And if anybody needs any help, you never saw a town that pitches in and helps like they do, always. If somebody's been in the hospital and had big bills, you know, hard luck and stuff, but they put on all kinds of things to raise money for them, everything. Or if anyone loses their home, why, they just pitch right in and help them. And everybody does it. Of course, we're getting so many new people down here now, it isn't the same anymore. We've got four families right here from New Jersey. Can you imagine that? Yes, there's four of them. I know part of them from New Jersey. And one of their father, one of them was out here this summer, and he was in the shop when I was, and he said, was asking about this, there wasn't quite a few people, and I said, yes, and I said, really? I said, I know there's nothing we can do about it, but I said, it is, we don't like it too well. He said, yes, but you still have lots of space here. I said, yes, but we're not going to have it this rate. And of course, I guess we do have a lot of space from where a lot of them are from. But at the rate they've been coming in here, you know, right now, I can go down on the little street and half the people I meet, I don't know. It's just surprising. And it's the same way at all of these little towns.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Post Falls, have you ever been up to Post Falls?
Mm-hmm.
I've always felt that it was one of the nicest, quietest places. And now then, it has almost doubled in size. And they've got a problem up there.
They sure do.
Yeah, they sure have. And it's that way with so many of these. And you see, we don't have schoolroom for all of them anymore.
Well, you know, the difference that I was thinking of was in Moscow, you lived there for some years and people, and you still saw that kind of aloofness in some
mm-hmm.
people. But here, when you moved out here, did you find that they just accepted you fairly fast?
Yes.
Just
yes.
Right off?
Yes, that's right.
That's really
that's
different.
Right. Because we didn't know, but, well, of course, you can't live this close to Troy without coming through it. In fact, we owned some land up towards Beauville, and we used to run cattle up there. Well, we'd always come through and like that. But as far as knowing the people here, we only knew two families down this way. But then, you know, as I said, everybody is so friendly and everything. But and, of course, I always told everyone that Moscow was the most stuck-up town that I was ever in.
You think it was unusual for a town of its size?
I do. I do think so. Mm-hmm. I do think, because I've lived in cities. I lived in Sioux City, Iowa for a long time. And we were in Denver for a while.
What do you think it comes from? Where is it? Is it because the university is there, or what's the deal?
I can't figure it out. I've always, right now, the university is what makes that town. Of course, it's a good farming area, and it's been a rich farming area. But right now, I think it's a disgrace, a town the size of Moscow, and the university is what makes it that there isn't places for those students to live. Now, I just think it's a disgrace. And I've told some of the businessmen what I think about it. And then when they come up with that billion-dollar dome up there, I said, sure, that's fine for Houston, Texas, but the town the size of Moscow, and there's no place for the students to live. Now, I happen to know at some of those dorms and those fraternity houses and the sorority houses, 4 years ago, there were two in the rooms. Last year and this year, they've got three and four in the rooms, and there's no place for them to put their things. And over at WSU, I know two because I knew some of the boys that were over there. And the same thing at Moscow, they were sleeping in sleeping bags out in the halls in some of those places.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, you can't go to school and do that. And as I said, don't you think that's a disgrace to the towns? Of course, Pullman's always building and building and building, but look what the rent is. And you know, time those students pay the rent, you as a student, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I tell you, now, you see, this Lonnie, this grandson of mine, he spent 5 years up there. He's an architect. And he always had a scholarship. And he always worked through the summer. But even so, his folks, if they had to help him all the time, he couldn't get through school.
Sure.
And the daughter, she's teaching up Spokane now. She had 4 years up there. And I tell you, it was rough
mm-hmm.
for him to keep in school.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said, you can put up a billion-dollar dome and no place for the students
mm-hmm.
to live. Now, maybe I'm not looking at it right. I don't know.
No, I agree with you. I think that's wrong priority. It really is.
Yeah.
I know a lot of the social life in Moscow seemed to go around the churches in the early
yeah,
days. And I wonder if that's really part of what it is, too,
yeah.
that you have to be an established member of a congregation or something,
yeah.
too.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. I'll tell you one thing. The Mormons that come in up there, as they see to it that there's a place for them to live, because with the Mormon church and all, they see to it that there is a place
mm-hmm.
for them to live, and I think it's great. But so many of the others, it's like you said, if you can't belong to the Presbyterian church or the Methodist church, well, the Presbyterians, they don't want to have anything to do with the Methodists. That's one thing I've got against Moscow. Each church, you know, is his own.
Mm-hmm.
And they look down on the others. And that I don't go along with. I always say I don't care what church you belong to. There's only one God. So I don't care what church you belong to. And but anyway, up there, they're like that. You'll find that in Moscow. Yeah.
I'm gonna have to run because what's gonna happen?